Welcome to the Six Figure Developer Podcast, the podcast where we talk about new and exciting technologies, professional development, clean code, career advancement, and more. I'm John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.
With us today is Corey Weathers. Corey is passionate about solving human problems with technology. Before joining Twilio, he worked as a software developer, tester, performance engineer, and consultant with Microsoft and Intapp. Welcome, Corey.
Hey, what's up, guys? Happy to be here.
Yeah. So to get started, would you just maybe tell us a little bit about your background, kind of maybe how you got started in the industry?
Yeah. My story is very like traditional and yet kind of crazy and diverse. I did my undergrad in computer science in 2003. That's when I started. And like a typical computer science student, you go and you go find internships because that's how you get jobs. And I was shooting my luck at trying to get an internship with the NSA because I was doing my undergrad at Howard. And that didn't work out well because my grades were terrible. But somehow, some way, I landed up on the interview loop for Microsoft. And I got my very first internship with those guys in 2005, which led to a second internship in 2006, which bizarrely took me to the IRS, all doing software development. Yes, this is like the right reaction. After spending some time at the IRS over my last year, I was like, no, I can't do this. I'm going back to Microsoft. So I went back to Microsoft and joined a rotation program that allowed me to do anything we pretty much chose over the course of 2 years. And because I had been doing internships, all software development focused, I was like, let me use this as an opportunity to do something completely non-CS related. And by the end of the 2 years, I touched business management, developer evangelism, program management, which I guess today is product management, and this weird role that they had called a solution architect. And that all went well. And then I realized, I really want to get back to code. So from there, my journey pivoted hard right back into code. I became a tester and then a test lead. And then a tester again, all in Microsoft IT and in Windows and in PowerPoint. And by the time I finished up in PowerPoint, I was like, okay, I really want to get connected back to people. And that took me to Microsoft Services, where I became a test consultant. And did all of that. Okay, so that all happened over like, I think 6 years or something like this. It's craziness. But after all of that, I was like, no, I want to actually have a kid and be home and all the things. You know, after getting off the road from doing the consulting gig, I joined Intapp as their first and only performance engineer. And by the time I finished up at Intapp, I went to Twilio to become a developer evangelist, because the thing that I've realized in all of my jobs, like, I love building code so that I can show it off to people. Like, I don't necessarily want to show off product to people, but I do like showing people like how code works. Like, to me, that's magical. So yes.
Cool. So that kind of gets us to what you're working on these days. Would you talk a little bit about Twilio for people that aren't really too familiar with it?
Yeah. So Twilio builds a set of communications APIs and services. So if you are, say, building an app, and from your app, you want to be able to communicate with folks via text messaging, phone calls, video, things of the such, now email, because we bought a company named SendGrid, which was phenomenal. You can use Twilio's APIs and services for that. And so my job at Twilio now, like, I love my job now because I only have one job responsibility, which is inspire and equip developers to build the future of communications. What that looks like, completely up to me, which is exciting, right? As an evangelist. So these days, you can find me on Twitch, streaming every Tuesday, Thursday, Friday afternoon at 2 p.m. Eastern, where we build a number of different projects. One of them that I was working on before was a digital jukebox powered by Twilio and Spotify, but he uses Blazor on the front end. And we're not finished yet, but we need to actually get there. Like, I had to put that one on the shelf because I'm building another project, which is a raffling project, which I'm going to take to the Kansas City Developers Conference next week. So I'm super excited about that. So yeah, there's that. And then you'll find me out at events. And sometimes you'll find me like tinkering at events on different small ideas, because this is just the madness of what we do.
Developer evangelist seems kind of like a dream job for a developer. You basically get to play all day, right? with like your only limiting factor being that you're also sort of trying to show off what your company can do, right?
Yeah.
How do you fall into a job like that? And is it as awesome as it sounds?
Yeah, I'll be real transparent, right? I did developer evangelism at Microsoft, and I did not enjoy it. And it is like night and day between the way that I did it at Microsoft and the way that I do it at Twilio. Microsoft's approach at that time, while very developer-centric, was very much focused on pushing product. Twilio's approach to evangelism is very much more around service to the developer community, right? So the question like we keep asking ourselves is like, because we are a part of the developer communities, right? It's not like we're just showing up and be like, hey, come use our product. Like, no, I'm building with Blazor. I can tell you how to build Blazor components and the things that you will struggle with as I struggle with on every upgrade for .NET Core, right? So because that's the case, it's like, what are some of the things that I could be doing to help others in the community who are also struggling with the same things, right? And if as a part of that, you realize, well, hey, yeah, I do work for Twilio. What's this company about? Like, I got on this Twilio shirt. Then, you know, we start to have that conversation. So it's fun. And it found me by accident. And I will take that for the win.
Before the show started, before you got on, we were kind of talking about telemarketing. And how, we're constantly getting plagued with calls from robots telling us that our car warranty is about to expire. That's all Twilio's fault, right?
It is one of those questions that we get at every event I go to. So I'm going to give you the canned answer, like the say this, and then there's what I really think. The say this is, no, it's not our fault. And we work really hard to make sure that people who abuse the platform get kicked off the platform. Because the thing that most folks forget is like, yeah, we have the software side of it. So sure, you can send a text message with like two or three lines of code on our end, but then we still have to connect up to the phone companies. And so if you start abusing, you know, Twilio services to do that ridiculous spamming stuff, they will shut us down, right? So there's like the canned answer. Like what I really think. So it's funny. So our CEO just published the first of a series of blog posts. And when I say just, I'm totally lying. So he posted this blog post, I think like a month and a half ago, where he talked about like why the industry is the way that it is and why people can get away with spamming and how like leaders in the industry can make changes. And so what I appreciate is, yes, while we do kick people off who abuse the platform, the other side to it is we're also trying to say, no, this is how we can change the industry, as opposed to people continuing to get calls saying that they owe some ridiculous fees on a car warranty that they no longer or ever had.
Very cool.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of the difference in a lot of the applications, frameworks, libraries out there, is that many of those companies and or products or software applications are just released into the wild, and it's up to the individual teams to implement it. But Twilio is providing an API to the service, and so that you guys can really kind of monitor the usage and determine whether they're using it in good faith, right? Do you guys have a very strong usage agreement, or how does that work?
Yeah, our user policy gets updated a lot. And the thing that I always point to as an example is when all the madness went down in Charlottesville, our CEO, who's Jeff Lawson, he's notorious for making like extremely bold statements and forcing us to live those values behind the statements. And one of the things that he said was, you know, you we will not allow Twilio's services to be used to transmit hate speech, which is a really like if you think about that technically, that is really difficult because there's context, right? And so, you know, to be able to make that statement and then to lead the company in a direction where we have to figure out, like, how do we ensure that we have the systems monitoring security gates in place to stop that from happening? That's a big thing, but we're pushing forward on it and he's very serious about it. And so it's one of the things, I mean, yeah, like, okay, so I obviously I'm biased. I love Twilio, right? Yes, thank you for keeping me employed, right? But I really do appreciate that, like, we try to live the values day in and out because it's just, we think it's the right thing to do.
I really like that the company is willing to invest who knows how much money and time and effort on trying to ensure that they have a safe platform that isn't going to be used for negative purposes. That's really awesome.
Yeah, it's a fun thing to work for a tech company that has a conscience. And I'm gonna be very careful because that's a loaded statement. Right? I mean, every tech company wants to make money, sure. And every tech company should want to do the right thing. And the two don't always, you know, agree with each other. And so I appreciate that I'm an evangelist and I don't get paid the dollars to make those trade-off discussions, but I also appreciate that at Twilio, they give us the room to be able to say, like, hey, we think this is the wrong direction. We need to maneuver and do things differently. And it's the same way, like, we do a lot of things at the company. So even when I think about the way I choose events, I just literally last week had a conversation around, like, hey, if an event sponsorship is, say, $10,000, why would we want to spend $10,000? Like, what do we get out of the $10,000? Especially when we don't try to push product directly in this way, you know? So, yeah.
So what all is involved in policing the usage of a service like Twilio? Is it machine learning and sentiment analysis to detect the context that you mentioned earlier? Or how do you go about determining...
Yeah, I'm going to tell you what I know, and then I'm going to tell you what I don't know, and that's going to make this really fun. So the parts that I know, for sure we use some machine learning. How? I'm not sure, because I've never asked, so I'm curious now that you've asked. I know for sure that there is regular monitoring of some specific communications. Like, obviously, there are some accounts where, like, for instance, Uber is a customer of ours, right? So we want to already have some regular monitoring in place to make sure that those customer relationships are taken care of. The rest of this, I have no idea of. I do know that there are people paid to do it, and they always say, no, we're doing it.
I know that one of the areas that you sort of reach out to the community is with live streaming on Twitch, and you do that like three times a week or something like that. Would you talk to us a little bit about sort of how you got started, what kind of drove you in that platform, and what that's been like for you?
Oh man, that's been an adventure. Let me say, I'm going to acknowledge my bias. Right, I'm a guy who works in the developer culture. I mean, I look very traditional oftentimes on Twitch, where I've got on my hoodie and I'm sitting here thinking we're hacking away, right? Like, it's super traditional. And I'll tell you why I'll call this out in a little bit. But I started on Twitch in, I think, like late January, in large part because I live in the middle of Pennsylvania, where, like, my wife is a professor at Penn State. We are slowly figuring out how to adjust to what it means to be rural, right? Because we both grew up in the city, right? So it's an adjustment. And the biggest factor for me as an evangelist is, like, I want to connect with developers. And it's harder to do in person coming from the middle of Pennsylvania as opposed to lighting up a camera. And so, you know, we got these fun lights back here. So now I look all bright and production ready, which is great. And so we got this really expensive microphone that's super great. It makes me sound better than I really do. And we're like, all right, well, let's see what we could do with the platform. And so I lit it up legitimately just to connect with .NET developers and was like, okay, well, let me start writing some code on Twitch. And I learned two things very quickly. One is, there is such an active developer community there. Now, let me come back to that bias I called out. Such an active developer community of which you don't exactly know what they look like. So figuring out, like, how do you target specific developers on Twitch? Yeah, that's difficult. Let's just call out what that is. But then the other side to it is, and then there's the community of streamers who I, for me, have been just very welcoming, very gracious, very helpful in terms of recommended tips, tricks. I was super proud the one day that, like, someone they came to my stream and they tried to troll me on the stream because I was like, oh man, I've gotten important enough to be trolled. Yes. Right. Like that was like, okay, I'm starting to do a thing here. And, you know, with Twitch, it took me, I think like 4 months or maybe 3.5 months to reach I guess there's a basic streamer and then there's the affiliate streamer and then there's like partner level streamer. And I've reached the affiliate level streamer pretty quickly. I think they set it up that way. But it's been great because now I get different ways to connect with the folks who watch the stream. And so we've now branched out from just Corey lighting up his camera to now Corey doing different types of content. So one show is all about me coding. Another show is about us bringing new developers into the world of .NET development, thanks to Twitch, and answering some of those newbie questions very practically. Like I hate, this is a long answer, but I hate the ones where it's like, hey, welcome to, you know, C# and .NET. Let's do Hello World. Like, like who the hell really is building 8 different iterations on Hello World? Like that just doesn't work. Yeah. Right. So like, let's do something real. So we have one show for that. And then we have another show where it's all about like, okay, well, how can we feature other voices? So we're developing that one now, trying to figure out like, how do we get others' stories spotlighted through our community on Twitch? So it's fun.
How do you like prepare for, especially like, let's say the one show where you're like, I mean, obviously you probably have some sort of project that you're working on, but have you found like talking in front of the camera just to be real natural? I mean, you're obviously very natural in this interview, but how do you prepare for that? And how do you like sort of keep that going?
Yeah, it is hard. I won't lie. Like there's a lot of work there that most people wouldn't even realize. Like for instance, these cameras, I got the lights on, right? It's hot in here. So you always want to make sure you have water close by. And that is completely not technical. It's just get a cup, bring a jug of water, keep it close, right? But don't drink too much because then you have to run to the restaurant. But it is a thing where I've now learned to set aside time both before and after stream. Mm. Before the stream, more so to focus on content. And I lay out my show a little bit so that way I can set up objectives. Mm. And then during the show, the one piece that I'm still always working on is like, how do we continue to engage the chat room? Because the chat room is such a big feature of Twitch that like YouTube, folks can leave comments. But engaging in a chat way that feels very interactive is just not the same. And so engaging with the chat room is a thing. And then after the show, I take no meetings. Like you just spent 2 hours or 4 hours writing code, talking to people, answering questions, dealing with bugs, dealing with bad documentation. You do not want to talk to anyone. So just don't.
I started actually tuning into your Twitch show in the last couple of weeks and was really enjoying the way that you were approaching solving particular problems. And I think one or two episodes were strictly devoted to those new to coding in general. So, you know, what have you found to be what people like the most and is more engaging? Is it contributing to part of the project on GitHub, or is it communicating on dealing real world problems, or just the pure newbie type episodes where you're thoroughly explaining everything, every step you're taking?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. There are two things that I've seen, and one that just has failed miserably. And this is actually interesting. The one that failed, because that's easiest. I thought, like, we did a couple of DevOps episodes. And I was like, oh, yeah, this would be great. You know, people be interested to see like, well, let's really see what DevOps really means. Oh, my God, the engagement for that one was terrible. And some of that, I think, is because of the tooling, because we were using Azure DevOps, and it's just not as well documented in some places.
That's what I do. Just, I understand.
Good. So, John, you get it. I'm just going to leave that there. We'll let people form opinions. But then the other side to it that has worked really well, definitely the newbie one. So the Series Zero to Hero is all for the folks who are brand new. And the intention is to take you from zero to hero status, confidence-wise, right? And what's been fascinating is people will jump into the chat room and just be like, oh my God, I'm learning so much. Or, man, can you explain this specific thing? Because I see that you did it, but I don't understand why. And I always tell the chat room, like, slow me down, keep me honest, because, you know, my muscle memory will have me just doing things that I'm just used to doing after now doing this for 15 something, you know, some odd years. But that's been fun. And then the other side to it is people love when you struggle, which is absurd. Like, I can't believe it. How dare you like take pleasure in me, like not being able to get my code to run. But they love to see the struggle. They love to see you kind of go through and find solutions. And so I think those two have made this very rewarding for me. Now, as to what that means to Twilio, I have no idea.
Has there been any big hurdle with making the transition? And I suspect is the move to the rural part of the country, is that new? Is that different? Is that a bigger transition? Is this live streaming working out, or you know, do you wish that you get more engagement, more one-on-one in-person engagement, or how do you feel about that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think one thing I've struggled with is I like people. Like, okay, that sounds real big. Like, I started this by saying, like, I'm really excited about showing, like, how software works to people, right? But I don't want to be a professor. So keeping that in mind, I like getting to conferences and code camps and thing and meetups, right? And talking shop, so to say. So that has been difficult for me. It will continue to be difficult for me personally. But, you know, what I like about the way Twilio lets me do this gig is, you know, like next week, I'm going to the Kansas City Developers Conference. The week after that, I'm giving a talk on Dijkstra in JavaScript. Dear Lord, help me. The week after that, no, that same week, I'm getting on the startup bus, which is somewhat technical, but a bit more startup focused because I also have my MBA. And so, like, you know, I get to touch all these different get to touch the community in all these different ways that it's just a ton of fun. And when you get stuck in the sticks for a little bit and you're bogged down, well, you get to get out and go see people and connect in very authentic ways.
I would love to see the Dijkstra talk if you're going to record that in any kind of way. I love reading his papers because he's asking the same programming questions that I'm asking. And it was like, you know, 60, 70 years ago.
Yes.
But back to the streaming a little bit, I have a slight bit of OCD where if I'm going to watch something, I have to watch it all the way from the beginning. Do you by chance have the videos backed up to YouTube, or is your Twitch status high enough where the videos stick around for a while? Because, you know, like standard, they disappear after 2 weeks, which stinks.
Yeah. So I learned this trick, which is if you connect Twitch to Amazon Prime and you're not an affiliate, you can upload your videos for 60 days. And I have an Amazon Prime account. So I did that like 2 weeks ago. And of course, I had already been affiliate, but I didn't activate it because, you know, I don't pay attention to things. So then I was like, okay, well, let me go activate it. And then I realized, well, if I download and then re-upload the videos, they stay around permanently. So I'm in the process of doing that for all of the content, at least that we've already streamed. But then there is the YouTube upload, and the YouTube story is a little bit weird. The only thing I'll say is we haven't figured out where to put it on YouTube. Like, I know that sounds crazy, but because I do this like for my day job, ideally, you'd think, okay, we'll just stick it on Twilio's account, which obviously we're a developer-focused company. So yes, that would make sense, except we have a lot of other videos on our Twilio account. So it's really hard to determine, you know, that same question. Are you reaching the developers that you really want to by putting this video on that channel? So then it goes, well, stick it to my personal account, but I have no brand. You know, no one cares about Corey, so to say. They care about Twilio. So we're trying to figure out like what the YouTube story will be. But in the short term, they will be on Twitch. That is something I need to complete this week, actually.
Awesome.
So to kind of take it in a little bit different direction, one of the questions we ask all the guests is to see if they could give just some words of wisdom to people that might be just getting started. You know, think back when you were getting started, you know, what was a lesson that you would have loved of, you know, someone handed you with all the experience that you have now. So what might you tell those listeners?
To sleep on it. God, I know it sounds crazy. You know, so it is legitimately like you get these problems sometimes and it's the IDE acting up, or it's the compiler doing something weird that you didn't expect, or it's your code that's just terribly written and you're like, I have no idea how to debug this, or it's your code that's very well written. And next thing you know, you're like, wait, who did what with what? No, you're not supposed to do that. The function wasn't written that way. Right. So it gets really hard to troubleshoot these kind of things. And when you're sitting there, I remember sleeping in lab. That's why I said sleep on it. I remember sleeping in the computer lab in undergrad and waking up at like 3 o'clock in the morning being like, I found the answer. When you struggle with something and you really are just at that point where you've been going at it and it's just been this constant boulder push. Mm-hmm. Just let the boulder roll backwards and sleep on it. And in the morning, I promise, or in the afternoon, whenever you decide to go to sleep, I promise if things will get clearer.
Awesome. What about resources for people who might want to be getting started with either Twilio or just development in general? What could you point people to?
So the Twilio answer is fun. We built this game called Twilio Quest. Twilio Quest is like, if you could take the graphics of Super Mario Brothers, combine it with challenges that allow you to write code and earn points and swag and things of the such, that is Twilio Quest. And I promise you, for every developer, there is a path. So I usually say to folks, if they are just trying to explore Twilio, just to get a sense of like all the things that we do, or if they have a specific use case, like super specific, and they want to understand how one of our products works, twilio.com/quest. That's the Twilio Quest URL. Now, for folks new to developing, so I've been playing around with HackerRank and God, there's another one I just found out about. It's another site that allows you to do coding challenges and earn points as you go. And I really like these sites in large part for two reasons. One is like I went to undergrad, right? And I paid way too much money in today's dollars to get my computer science degree when now I could just go to YouTube and hear all the people tell me the things, right? And so, you know, like they could do the same thing, except YouTube videos are also terrible sometimes. And so what I like about HackerRank very specifically is they have like the content, but then they also have a tutorial. And so if you walk the tutorial step by step, you will figure these things out. So I'm a big fan of HackerRank and sites like HackerRank. I always recommend that. Now, you didn't hear me say Stack Overflow because it's just a part of the toolkit now. It just is what it is.
Very cool. And you mentioned you're going to be at the,
KCDC, Kansas City Developers Conference.
Do you have any other conferences that you can plug, speaking engagements that you might be coming up pretty soon?
Not in the immediate future. KCDC is my last one for a while. Because I'm transitioning to streaming.
Okay.
But, what I am trying to do very clearly is figure out where I'm going to be in September. I know in October, I go to one conference a month now. October, I'm going to DevUp in St. Louis, which is exciting. We've got KCDC this month. In September, that's where it is. I'm going to San Diego for Visual Studio Live. So there's like a lot of stuff out there. And I totally did that in not chronological order. So, you know, that's like complicated to follow, but I get it.
Okay. And if our listeners wanted to follow you specifically, you obviously have your Twitch account. But what about social media, Twitter? Where can they find you?
Yeah, the fastest and easiest way is on Twitter. And my handle there is Corey L. Weathers. And then if you did want to catch the Twitch stream, which I'm excited to be lighting up this week, it's twitch.tv/ the letters C, L, and then W spelled out. So D-U-B-Y-A.
Cool.
All right. Very nice. Thank you, Corey. Really appreciate you coming on the show.
Hey, you all have been amazing. Thanks for having me. We got to ramble for a good bit, so appreciate it.
That was Corey Weathers. Corey is passionate about solving human problems with technology. Before joining Twilio, he worked as a software developer, tester, performance engineer, and consultant with Microsoft and NetApp.
If you like this episode, please like, rate, and review on iTunes.
Find show notes, blog posts, and more at sixfiguredev.com.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at sixfiguredev.
This has been another episode of the Six Figure Developer Podcast, helping others reach their potential. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash. We'll be right back.